Thank you, John. Have you ever wondered what chocolate eggs have to do with Easter, a festival that's all about the death and resurrection of Christ? Well, in this week's episode of The Good Life on ABC Radio and on your pod, we discuss the pagan origins of Easter and how they live on in our modern traditions. It all goes back to the middle of the first millennium, when Christianity spread through northwestern Europe and the British Isles. New Christian festivals were often grafted onto existing pagan ones, and Christian traditions became infused with the pagan rituals that predated them. That's why many Christian festivals today are marked by traditions that have very little to do with the themes being celebrated. Carol Cusack is a professor in the Department of Religion at Sydney University and an expert in pagan studies. So after a quick pit stop to buy some Easter eggs, I caught up with Carol to find out what eating chocolate eggs has to do with living the good life over Easter. I'm outside a confectionery shop and general store on a busy street in the middle of the city in Sydney, and I'm looking in at a display cabinet full of Easter eggs, all different coloured Easter eggs, chocolate Easter eggs, Easter bunnies, packets of Easter eggs, chick eggs, soft nougat eggs. I think I'll choose this box of multicoloured eggs here. Hi there, how much for these?
$4.99, sir.
Hang on a sec.
How's your day been?
Oh, it's been pretty good, thanks.
That's a shot.
There you go.
Thank you. Do you need a receipt?
Oh, no. No, that's all right, thanks. I wonder if you could tell me, though, do you have any idea why we eat chocolate eggs on Easter?
I would say that the eggs symbolise new life, in terms of symbolising an egg from a chicken, and in terms of Christian beliefs, that's to do with Christ rising from the dead.
That sounds like a pretty good guess. Thanks for that.
Mate.
Cheers.
Hello, I'm Carol Cusack. I'm an associate professor in studies in religion at the University of Sydney.
Hi, Carol. Would you like an Easter egg?
Thank you very much. I'll take the green one.
Ah, well, I was going to ask what colour you preferred, the green.
Yes, not because it's my favourite colour, but because it's most appropriate to the theme of Easter.
Why is green appropriate to the theme of Easter?
Because Easter is about fertility, and specifically fertility of the natural world, and if we're thinking about the Northern Hemisphere and the emergence from the cold winter, one of the most obvious things that people would see is the greening of the landscape.
But hang on, I thought that Easter was about the death of Christ and his resurrection 2 days later.
Christian festivals have normally been mapped onto pre-existing festivals, and so as Christianity spread out from the Roman Empire and into northern and western Europe, it came into contact with pre-existing ritual practices, and Christian festivals tended to be mapped onto pre-existing pagan calendars. So yes, Easter is about the death and resurrection of Jesus, but it's also about certain pagan themes that pre-existed the coming of Christianity.
Is that why the festival has a name that doesn't immediately appear to have anything to do with Jesus? I mean, Christmas, for example, the name itself indicates that it has something to do with Christ, but Easter doesn't seem to suggest anything to do with Christ. Where did that name come from?
It's interesting, of course, Easter and its cognates only exist as the term for the festival in a number of languages. Quite a lot of European languages, of course, call the festival by derivations of the word Pesach, or Passover, a Jewish festival, which, of course, Jesus was participating in prior to his death. So Pascha, which is common in Italian and Spanish. But Easter comes from the name of an Anglo-Saxon goddess. Her name is Eostre, E-O-S-T-R-E, and she only gets mentioned very, very sparingly in the sources. She's mentioned in a book by the Venerable Bede, a monk who wrote in the early 8th century in Northumbria, in the north of England. He wrote a book called De Temporum Ratione, which means On the Reckoning of Time, and it's actually a book about calendrical patterns and the reckoning of Easter and how you can reckon Easter correctly if you know certain calendrical principles. And in one chapter, chapter 15, I think, he talks about the names of the English months, and he mentions that the month in which the Christian festival takes place is called Yostramonath, the month of the goddess Yostra.
But that doesn't quite explain how the Christian festival of Easter came to be known by the name Easter.
By that stage, it was already. It took place in that month. And so people were probably not that aware of the goddess by the 8th century. If you think about it, Christianity comes to England in the 6th century, and England has a pretty, well, England is the wrong term to use anyway. The Anglo-Saxons convert relatively quickly, and it's also relatively bloodlessly. There are no martyrdoms, there are no wars over the coming of the new religion. It's quite successful. And so by the time Bede is writing, it's likely that in heavily Christianized areas, people think of Yostramonath as just meaning the month of Easter, not actually recognizing Easter specifically as being a goddess, a specific pagan goddess. So he's just pointing out what those months are called, and that's useful and helpful for us because we know then something of what Anglo-Saxons prior to Christianity thought, but we also know that the Christian calendar gets grafted onto the pagan calendar.
Let's talk eggs. I'm curious to know how chocolate eggs came to be associated with Easter, but let's not worry about the chocolate for the moment. Why is it that eggs were associated with the festival that happened at this particular time of year, the springtime festival?
Well, spring is a time of new life, and the two most familiar symbols of Easter nowadays in our commercialised culture are eggs and rabbits. And if you think about it, what comes out of eggs are chickens, i.e. they're a symbol of life, they're a symbol of fertility, and rabbits are well known for their somewhat indiscriminate breeding habits. So essentially what we're thinking about is the fact that this time of year is a time of great fecundity and a time of life-affirming values and interests. And so the egg and the rabbit are splendid symbols to associate with it.
It's all about sex, this festival.
In some senses, yes. Just imagine you've been cooped up all winter, snowbound, with very little in the way of fresh food to eat, only pickled and salted food. And you've been in the dark, something I think modern people don't understand, because it's a world, as a book written several decades ago called it, lit only by fire. So when it's dark and it's cold in the Northern Hemisphere, it really is. And the coming of spring, therefore, is a lot more noticeable, perhaps, than it would be in Australia. People come out, they see new life, their sheep and cattle have little lambs and calves, there's vegetables growing and leaves on the trees, and rabbits and eggs abound in symbolism of life and hope and happiness.
You picked the green egg. You could also have picked the red egg, I think, because isn't there an Orthodox Christian tradition of painting eggs red?
I picked the green egg for a very particular reason. I'm quite interested in modern paganism and do a fair amount of scholarship on it. And quite apart from the fact that green is the colour of spring and the vernal equinox, which is the goddess Yostra's traditional celebration, is something that is linked to spring and the greening of the country. But there also is a seminal neo-pagan magazine called Green Egg, which contains much very interesting material on what modern people do in terms of celebrating the goddess Yostra and many other goddesses. And so when I saw the green egg, I thought not only is it relevant to the season, but it also is in its own way a pagan symbol.
Do modern pagans still celebrate the festival of Vjostra?
Some do. She's not a goddess that has an immense amount of traction in the modern pagan movement. And that's because modern pagans tend to be inclined towards Celtic festivals. And this actually makes a lot of sense because all four of the major Celtic festivals got absorbed into the Christian calendar, so they continued very strongly. They are the 1st of February, Imbolc, which is St. Bridget's Day, the 1st of May, Beltane, which is Lady Day, a feast of the Virgin Mary, the 1st of August, Lunasa, which is now Lammas, Loaf Mass, a Christian harvest festival, and the 1st of November, Samhain, which is All Saints. And so all the Celtic festivals lived on through Ireland, Wales, Britain, and they are more popular than Germanic pagan festivals. So the people who tend to be interested in the goddess Vjostra would usually be modern pagans, slightly more eclectic than just Celtically oriented, and they would probably celebrate her on the actual spring equinox rather than the date of Easter, which after all is a particularly convoluted calculation of the first Sunday after the first full moon.
Presumably it would have been quite an important festival for people in the early part of the middle part of the first millennium, because as you say, it was the festival that signified coming out of the houses, coming out of winter, rebirth, the beginning of summer. After all, they kept the name of their old festival, Easter. Was it an important festival for them? And also, why didn't they change the name of the festival?
We don't actually know how important the goddess Vjostra was, and in fact she's referred to so rarely that lots of people have tried to argue that she wasn't important at all. In Anglo-Saxon sources, only the Venerable Bede discusses her. And in Germany, the season for Easter was called Ostara, which is clearly the same word, cognate, and so it's likely that there was a continental German goddess called Ostara who served the same function as Vjostra in Anglo-Saxon England. When you say why didn't they change the name, that is a puzzle that I'm not sure we all understand the answer to. One possible way of looking at it is that Christianity absorbed a lot of things without changing names. Sometimes they even made pagan gods and goddesses into saints. The stories of some of the saints reflect very strongly imagery from myths and legends that pre-existed. And all you need is a culture that's primarily oral, where in fact only the elite are literate, for wrong or misleading or continuing pagan appellations to stay attached to new festivals.
We see the same thing in the way that Christianity has spread largely through proselytizing in the 20th century to places like the Pacific Islands. Christian festivals have been combined with traditional festivals in those areas. Is this the marker of peaceful conversion?
That's a really good question, and I suspect it may well be. The Christianization of Anglo-Saxon England happened really, really quickly. The missionaries came in 597, led by Augustine, who was a North Italian monk. They landed at Canterbury. They got a good reception. And it's generally argued that by 667, which is 170 years later, every one of the seven kingdoms of Anglo-Saxon England had just peacefully converted. There weren't any wars, there weren't any persecutions. It's quite interesting. Some of that could have been because of tolerance to local customs. We actually have a letter from Pope Gregory the Great, written to a missionary called Mellitus in 601, so when the mission was 4 years old, and the Pope actually says, if there are any temples, don't knock them down. Take the idols out, bless them and reconsecrate them to Christianity. And if there's a festival day and the people are used to assembling somewhere because of that festival day, just make it a festival for something Christian and people will continue to come because they're used to coming, and then they'll come to associate the positive aspects of the festival with the new religion. So what he thought was happening was that you could keep the old forms, but you could put new content in. And of course, what we all know now is that form and content are kind of interdependent. It's very difficult to say, well, I'll just kind of clean everybody's minds off and they won't remember that they used to believe something else, and then we'll just put all this new stuff in. What tends to happen is that there is a combination or a symbiotic relationship that develops between the old and the new.
That's an excellent place to leave the interview, because that's what we're seeing now. The incongruity between form and meaning. We're celebrating a festival about the death and resurrection of Christ with chocolate eggs.
Thank you.
Carol Cusack, Professor of Religion at Sydney University, talking there about the pagan origins of Easter.